to On Jordan, a podcast on the latest developments in Jordanian politics, featuring interviews with experts from across the Hashemite Kingdom. My name is Aaron Maggett, a former Amman-based journalist, now in Washington. In a lengthy May 19th letter, King Abdullah wrote that he was restricting the communications and movements of Prince Hamza, the half-brother of the Jordanian monarch. Last year, the royal court accused Hamza, along with Bassam Awadallah, a former advisor to Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, of engaging in a sedition plot. King Abdullah noted 2 weeks ago that Hamza knew that Awadallah and Hassan bin Zayed had approached two unnamed foreign embassies to ask about the possibility of their country supporting what was described as regime change. The Hashemite king explained in his May letter that Jordan will allow Hamza to live comfortably, but he will not have the space he once abused to offend the nation, its institutions, and his family, nor to undermine Jordan's stability. Calling Hamza erratic, King Abdullah assailed his half-brother for doing nothing to serve Jordan and never offering anything of substance beyond complaints and populist slogans. Hamza was not able to publicly respond to King Abdullah's harsh letter, but in April of this year, renounced his title of prince, saying that the lessons taught by his father, King Hussein, were not in line with the modern institutions of Jordan, an implicit criticism of King Abdullah. So for a deeper look at the King's May letter critiquing Prince Hamza, it's great to welcome Amr Savaila to the podcast. Amr has been a columnist for 12 years at the Jordan Times. He is a non-resident fellow at the Stimson Center and was previously a professor at the University of Jordan. Thank you for joining us, Amr.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Aaron.
1 year later, what are your overall impressions of the 2021 sedition affair?
You know, this is something exceptional when it comes to this case in Jordan. We never experienced such new lines, new trends within the family itself. So I guess this is a country, one of the pillars of stability, that there was a very solid governance when it comes to the family. Very smooth transition in power when King Abdullah came to power in 1999 and previously. So it was always something like, you know, monarch families usually depend so much on the agreement on one person to represent the family. So I guess that was something exceptional, although I didn't see it a kind of rivalry to the king himself, but it was maybe a kind of attitude was seen as a real challenge and a way a threat as well for the stability of the system in Jordan. Today, you don't need much to push people to the street when it comes to economic situation, social frustration, etc. This kind of criticism might be seen in a different way as an invitation to move. So maybe, I guess that was one of the most critical issues that pushed to adopt, let's say, an approach to contain and stop this kind of attitude.
What were the most important parts of King Abdullah's May 19th letter critiquing Prince Hamza?
The whole issue was not managed in a very wise way from day one. So it was a small dispute that turned to be a problem. Then in more than 14 months, let's say, it was very clear that there was no serious effort or put an end to this case. So basically what I see, the letter is a fruit of silence for so long time. And I guess it was detailed because it wanted to close a chapter saying, now the story is over. And if you want to know all the details, this is the way. Like, look, personally, I don't think that it was useful. But I think that when you feel obliged to write such letters, just because you want to close it and you don't want to make it part of the public debate. But the point, I guess, that this kind of letter will not put an end to this story. Actually, it gave people more things to discuss and talk about. But hopefully that, like believing that trying to highlight the whole story from day one in this way would help at least to say, look, this is a case that is over. It's not there anymore. And I guess there was very harsh criticism to the prince himself. Tell people that the whole issue of Prince Hamza is over. I guess this is what the letter wanted to say, in my opinion.
Now, do you think King Abdullah's letter was not useful because it gave critics more ammunition to keep discussing the affair? Or are there other reasons for your concern?
Because I come from a different school when it comes to monarchies and families. I believe that any problem within the family should be kept inside the family. It should not be part of the public debate. Now, at the first stage, April 2021, it went out. It was mismanaged, and it ended up not just a Jordanian domestic debate, but it became an international, it had an international impact. So at that stage, I would have preferred to adopt an approach of de-escalation, in a way containing this problem, solving it from within, and showing the unity of the family instead, at any cost. You know, this is also my expertise in conflict management, believe that I should go to the core and solve the problem and not make it bigger. I believe that it should not have been from day one part of this public debate. And this letter with this length, with these details, for sure it gave people more and more topics and things to talk about and discuss. I don't know what people like even around the king believe that they would get from publishing such a letter, but I believe we should put an end to this issue, and the issues of the family should be kept from inside the family.
The royal court released a letter in March, purportedly signed by Hamza, asking King Abdullah for forgiveness. But a few weeks later, Prince Hamza tweeted that he was renouncing his title of prince and implicitly critiqued King Abdullah. So given the large differences in the two remarks, did Prince Hamza really write the March letter apologizing to King Abdullah?
We don't know, actually. We don't have information, but what we are seeing, there is problem in how things appeared, like the letter of asking apology, and 2 weeks after this kind of contradiction, it means that maybe it was right, and then there was a sense of regretting, and maybe he was not satisfied, so he had to do that. So this kind of contradiction, because he had the chance as well to say, I never did that. I have never written that letter. I never signed that. Or I was obliged to sign to write that letter. But obviously, with the chance he had to give up the title, he never mentioned that. But he actually insisted on his old narrative, accusing the current establishment that different from what King Hussein wanted it to be, so he doesn't want to be part of that. So I guess he had the chance as well to tell that it was not me, but not saying it means maybe it was a phase that it was mismanaged, he was not satisfied, he felt bitter, he was not really convinced, and in a way he had to regret it. It was much very easy for him to tell, look, I didn't write this letter, but we didn't see that.
King Abdullah wrote that Prince Hamza's state of denial did not begin at the April 21 sedition affair, but rather he started to stray from the family legacy years ago. Now, Hamza assailed corruption and failed management of the public sector in a 2018 Twitter post. So does King Abdullah believe that Hamza's public criticism of the Jordanian government means that he strayed from the family legacy, or is there something else involved?
It's obvious that he was not part of the establishment, so it was much easier for him to do criticism. And maybe if he was seen as part of the establishment like other princes. So basically, I guess it was clear that he's not satisfied. I think he was pushed as well to adopt this new approach, like approaching the public, doing this kind of criticism. And I guess when we realized that he was not part of the establishment and he never took a role and he was not seen by people as part of the decision-making process, or he was not entitled for any mission that has to do with people. So for sure, he would be seen differently. And that's why maybe not being part of that, it was the easiest way for him to start doing this criticism. And in a moment where many things are not functioning, impacts are very negative and people are frustrated. So I guess what he says has a lot of impact among people.
The Associated Press wrote in May that Hamza has enjoyed considerable popularity, particularly among the Jordanian tribes. Do you think this is accurate?
Yes, I don't think that this is not true, because what we saw that it's part of his hobby, like spending time there. So if he enjoys this, and people enjoy, like seeing prince coming to them, doing a humble life, talking to them, their language, doing their life, I think for sure you see him differently. But again, he's not part of the system, so he has this kind of leverage to do that. I don't know if for sure the king cannot and doesn't have the time to do what Hamza was doing. But in a way, I think, yes, we have to be frank about that. His lifestyle, his way of talking, his way of I think was very, very seen positively by Jordanians. But I think if there was another prince as well doing the same and having the same charisma, being with people in their daily life, I don't think that this will make Hamza unique or the only one who does that.
And do you think Prince Hamza is still popular among Jordanians even after last year's April sedition affair?
I think he's popular, yes. You know, in Jordan, you don't have a clear image of the situation. What you see is social media. You have the official narrative, like condemning Hamza for sure, and you have a popular narrative, in a way, sympathetic toward him. But at the end, this changes nothing. Even the popularity changes nothing today when it comes to real politique and practical life. Like, this popularity didn't change anything. And even supporters for Hamza at the end, you don't see any change. This is what I mean. Like, this popularity might be something like that has no real impact in real life.
King Abdullah wrote in May, "As always, Hamza resorted to the media in order to create a commotion and gain sympathy and attention." So why is Prince Hamza speaking to the press considered such a problem? Doesn't King Abdullah say that Jordan is an open society?
Well, you know, he's a prince at the end, part of the family. And when criticism comes from above, it means like it has an impact. So I guess when it comes to monarchies, there should be sometimes one line within the family. That's why the concept of consensus, of having one head to the country, one king, and at the very end, they are part of the ruling family. In a way, I guess the taboo or the new trend that Hamza created that made the challenge is not just criticism. It is the criticism that comes from above and comes from the inner circle of the king, which is the family. And I think this is what made things look a bit dangerous. Not what he says, but exactly the person who says.
What do you think is the significance of King Abdullah restricting Hamza's communications in the May letter?
Hamza was already in, communication is restricted. Maybe the surprise was the video he leaked to the BBC. That was when the issue happened, like last April 2021. So it was supposed to be very secretive, to be sold silently. Then all in a sudden, it blew up and became an international debate. We don't have as well today the narrative of Hamza because it's already restricted. But I guess what was meant in the letter is just to legitimize the de facto situation, which means he's already restricted, and it's restricted officially by this decision. So for sure, the narrative of Hamza will not be part of that. That's why maybe the letter in details sent to the public in a way to tell them about the story before closing it.
Do you think a public trial with both King Abdullah and Prince Hamza explaining their positions about what happened last year is the best way to transparently resolve this affair once and for all?
No, not at all. I think closing the chapter and doing a reconciliation from within is the best part. We should always seek reconciliation. We should show that family is united. We should not show that there is different trends and visions and rivalry within the family itself. So it's not that they should not seek the public, but they should, I think that the problem should be, in a way, solved from within and showing, again, a kind of unity and reconciliation among all the members of the family.
Is there anything else you haven't mentioned about the King's letter that you think is important?
Well, what I think is this is a problem that looked like a rolling snowball for a while. It is the time also to solve this problem and put an end to it. This is what all Jordanians really want to see, that there is no dispute, no problem inside the family.
Thank you very much, Amir. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was Jordan Times columnist Amir Savaila. Here's what else you should know this week. On June 1st, the Jordanian military announced that a Jordanian soldier was killed and two others wounded in Mali, where the Jordanian force was serving as part of a UN peacekeeping mission. The head of the UN mission in Mali said that the Jordanian soldier was killed by terrorists using rocket-propelled grenades and small arm fire. Last year, two additional Jordanian soldiers were killed in Mali as part of the UN force. In other news, the International Monetary Fund praised Jordan's economic reforms, highlighting a clampdown on tax evasion in a May 25th statement. Benefiting from increased tourism and remittances, the Hashemite Kingdom has boosted its revenues beyond the IMF targets for the first time in many years. Ali Abbas, a senior IMF official, noted that Jordan's expected inflation rate this year of 3.8% is much better than many other countries worldwide. Nonetheless, Jordan still suffers from widespread unemployment, with the official rate at 23%. Finally, a senior Jordanian military officer, Mustafa Hiyari, accused some units within the Syrian army, along with Hezbollah and other pro-Iran organizations, of threatening the Hashemite Kingdom's security by supporting drug smuggling operations across Jordan's northern border. During the first 5 months of 2022, Amman has seized 20 million Captagon tablets, compared to 14 million tablets in all of 2021. On May 22nd, Jordan announced it had killed four drug smugglers along the border, with over 40 individuals killed since the start of this year. Before I go, please subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts to be notified of new episodes. And feel free to listen to previous week's episodes on social media apps in Jordan with former senior Facebook official Ashraf Zaytoun and Professor Hassan Barari discussing the Hashemite Kingdom's stance on the Russian-Ukraine war. Finally, if you're listening to the podcast, especially if you live in Jordan and think you'd be a great guest, please reach out to me on Twitter, at Aaron Magid, or via email, aaron.magid1@gmail.com. I want to wish all Jordanians a happy belated Independence Day. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.